what's going outside the U.S. They have billions of dollars to spend on the Zionist regime, but cannot provide homes to the homeless in California, Houston, and Chicago. After COVID, there are millions who are homeless here in the U.S., yet they don't care about them. But they have money to spend on the Ukrainian conflict. They have money to spend on the Zionist regime, billions and billions of dollars. So this clearly shows that this is not a democracy. This, to this date, is clear fascism. Fascism of the capitalist, fascism of lobbyists that control these puppets. They have these masters of puppets who are trying to control the world, but they are now miserably failing. And Ukraine is a clear example of that. Ukraine is not equipped to fight Russia. They are not. Russia hasn't even used its full power as of yet. Winter is coming. They need to start focusing on themselves, then think of Iran.
Indeed. I wish we had more time. Thank you so much for that, Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist there from Houston, Texas. Masoud Shajar, a pleasure. Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Tagway and the team. It's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 2-4 of Surah Nahl, recited by Murtaza Rahnema.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Yunazzilul malaa'ikata bir-ruhi min amrihi 'ala man yasha'u min 'ibadihi an أنذروا أنه لا إله إلا أنا فاتقون خلق الإنسان من نطفة فإذا هو خصيم مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. He sends down the angels with inspiration by his commandment on whom he pleases of his servants, saying, "Give the warning that there is no God but me. Therefore, be careful of your duty to me." He created the heavens and the earth with the truth. Highly exalted be he above what they associate with him. He created man from a small seed, and lo, he is an open contender.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
UN report says more than 11,000 children have been killed or maimed during nearly 8 years of Saudi-led war on Yemen. Russia calls European countries' plan to reduce dependency on its gas absurd and frenzied, saying it only makes them dependent on U.S. LNG. And in Peru, at least two people are killed during clashes between police and protesters demanding elections and the release of the former president. Details just ahead. Hello everyone, a very warm welcome to World News. In our top story, the United Nations says more than 11,000 children have been killed or maimed in the Saudi-led war on Yemen. UN Children's Agency UNICEF says hundreds of thousands of children also remain at risk of death from starvation or preventable diseases such as cholera and the measles. According to the agency, around 2.2 million Yemeni children are acutely malnourished, a quarter of them age under 5 years old. Now, Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched war on Yemen back in early 2015. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have died since, either as a result of the war or indirectly through unsafe drinking water, disease outbreaks, hunger, and other impacts. A UN brokered truce this year lasted for about 6 months until October, but warring sides then failed to agree to an extension. Israeli atrocities against Palestinians know no bounds. Regime forces have killed one more Palestinian teenager in the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, 16-year-old girl was shot dead during an Israeli raid in the eastern neighborhood of the city of Jenin. Raid also left three injuries. Jenin has been a focal point of Israeli violence against Palestinians in recent months. Regime has also intensified crackdown on Palestinians throughout all occupied territories. So far this year, the Israeli military attacks have taken the lives of around 220 Palestinians in the West Bank and besieged Gaza Strip. The Iranian foreign minister says a central plank of Tehran's economic diplomacy is to further enhance economic cooperation with neighboring countries as well as other regional and Asian states. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comment at a ceremony marking the 30th anniversary of the expansion of the Economic Cooperation Organization. He said Iran attaches special significance to this ECO and takes every opportunity to boost cooperation among member states. The top diplomat added that Tehran pays due regard to further strengthening the role and status of multilateral organizations such as the ECO, which speed up mutual cooperation and contribute to regional economic development. The Economic Cooperation Organization is a political and economic intergovernmental bloc which was founded in 1985 by Iran, Pakistan, and Turkey. After the dissolution of the Soviet Union, ECO expanded further with the inclusion of Afghanistan, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan in 1992. Islamabad says heavy gunfire and artillery by shelling, that is, by Afghan forces, has left at least 6 civilians dead across the border in Pakistan. Now, the Pakistani army said it retaliated at a border crossing in southwestern province of Balochistan. Afghan officials say the incident was accidental and the situation is now back to normal. Our correspondent in Islamabad, Nasser Kazmi, joined us earlier with some details.
This was the attack which has targeted the civilian in Pakistan. Especially, this is the porous border between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And the reports confirmed that 6 people have lost their lives, while 17 other was wounded in this attack. And there was an emergency declared in all the hospitals in southwestern Balochistan province, while the rescue teams took the wounded persons to the hospitals, where many of them are said to be in critical condition. This attack was carried out by Afghan border forces, and the Pakistan military says that the Afghan forces used heavy machine guns and artillery, and they fired mortar shells on the civilians in Pakistan. This was the second attack in the last 10 days. We have witnessed that a Pakistani high commission, the Pakistani head of mission in Kabul came under attack in Pakistani embassy, and Pakistan lodged a protest in front of Afghan, Afghan government, and asked the Taliban that to stop such attacks and to provide the security to the officials who are working in the embassy, as well as the civilians who are living inside Afghanistan.
The United Nations mission in Afghanistan is urging the Taliban government to put an end to violations of human rights under their rule. Mission issued the call in a statement marking Human Rights Day, said all restrictions imposed on the rights of Afghans should be removed. Ramatollah Baghban has your details in this report from Kabul.
The United Nations Assistance Mission in Afghanistan has called on the Taliban to safeguard the basic rights of Afghans, especially those of women and girls. The mission said Taliban's edicts and orders in many cases have violated or impinged on the basic rights and freedoms of the population.
The United Nations in Afghanistan is urging the de facto authorities to stop restricting the basic rights of Afghans, especially those of women and girls, because those who govern have an immense responsibility as duty bearers to every woman, man, girl, and boy.
In reaction, the Taliban deputy spokesman said the so-called Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan has been committed to ensuring the rights of all Afghans. Bilal Karimi also dismissed the UN mission's stance as unreasonable.
We are committed to upholding human rights on the principles of Islamic law, but the statements published by foreigners can have two reasons. Either they are not aware of our culture and Islamic society, or they neglect our Afghan and Islamic values for political motivations. However, they literally don't care about human rights, but they have problems with Islam and implementation of Islamic orders. Such remarks by them are unjustifiable. Actually, our people did not fight invaders for decades to see Western patterns being practiced in their society.
Human rights activists say the Taliban need to be more flexible and supportive when it comes to the human rights of the Afghan people.
Of course, Afghans are Muslims and have their own culture, but the Taliban should not force people to practice religion according to their point of view. The Taliban are depriving the people of their very fundamental rights. Most of their orders on women are against the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, to which Afghanistan was a signatory.
Serious violations of the rights of women and girls by the Taliban, including the right to education, have added insult to injury caused by the U.S. sanctions on Afghanistan and their impact on the human rights situation in the country. The global community has so far refused to recognize the Taliban government in Afghanistan. Upholding human rights by the de facto administration is mentioned as one of the conditions for the recognition. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Russia says that Europe's attempts to put an end to its reliance on Russian gas are absurd and frenzied. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said Europe has shifted to natural gas imports from the United States in a bid to overcome its dependency on Russian gas. But according to Peskov, the dependency has not ended as the continent is now leaning on American LNG. Remarks come as the European Union plans to hold an emergency meeting Tuesday to arrive at an agreement on imposing a price cap on natural gas. Most of the bloc's members are struggling with energy shortages and fuel price hikes caused by repercussions of the Ukraine war. Four suspects have been charged and remanded in custody in a Belgian investigation into alleged corruption at the European Parliament tied to the Middle Eastern country of Qatar. Federal prosecutor's office did not identify the four suspects named, but a judicial source says they include Greek member of the European Parliament, Eva Kaili, and one of the parliament's vice presidents. Office also said the home of a second MEP was searched on Saturday. The investigation has sent shockwaves through the European Parliament. Prosecutors say Qatar is suspected of influencing the decisions of the European Parliament through cash payments or gifts to top figures. Qatar says it's not aware of any details of this probe, adding any claims of misconduct by Doha are gravely misinformed. Nurses will take strike action in Britain on Thursday for the first time in the 106-year history of their union. Nearly 100,000 members of the Royal College of Nurses will be walking off the job nationwide after the government rejected their pay demands. Work stoppage will reduce services to Christmas staffing levels. Union wants a pay rise significantly above inflation, which has surged to a 41-year high. The government, however, says that will not be unaffordable. Britain has been witnessing back-to-back strikes across different sectors in recent months. Situation has been triggered by inflation and surging energy prices that came on the heels of Western sanctions on Russia over the war in Ukraine. Ukraine will continue to export grain from the southern port city of Odessa despite recent Russian attacks targeting local energy infrastructure. The Agriculture Ministry says traders are facing problems, but for now there is no talk of suspending the shipments. According to President Volodymyr Zelensky, latest round of Russian strikes have left more than 1.5 million people without power in the region of Odessa. Ukraine is one of the largest grain exporters on the planet. It resumed shipments in July after a six-month halt caused by the war. But there have been some disruptions, partially due to Russian strikes on energy networks since October. Moscow says strikes are in response to Ukrainian attacks on Russian power lines. More than a dozen people are feared dead in an explosion that flattened an apartment block in the island of Jersey as rescuers lose hope of finding survivors.
We brought over a number of specialist assets yesterday and yesterday afternoon, some of which came in Chinooks, thanks to the support of the military. To bring in not only those specialist assets, but also sniffer dogs and the like, to give us the confidence that we need that we have now moved into the recovery phase. So inevitably and tragically and sadly, that is the case.
Smith said around 12 residents are missing and recovery operation could take weeks. At least three people have been confirmed dead in the blast in the Channel Islands port capital, St. Helier, early Saturday. Police say a gas leak was likely the cause. Fire services had been called to the property several hours before the explosion after residents had reported the smell of gas. The fire chief has conceded something had gone horribly wrong. Jersey is a British Crown dependency, not part of the United Kingdom, It has a resident population of just over 100,000 people. In Peru, protests against the new government are growing by the day. Police have clashed with demonstrators who are demanding a nationwide strike, fresh elections, and the release of the former president. Now, this is the fourth consecutive night of protests, with demonstrators gathering in a number of cities, including Cajamarca, Cusco, and Puno. In the city of Andahuaylas, police used tear gas to disperse protesters who fired slingshots and hurled stones. At least two protesters have been killed and several injured throughout the clashes. They vowed to continue the rallies, though, until Congress has been shut down. Former President Pedro Castillo was detained and removed from office on Thursday, and that happened after he tried to dissolve Congress hours before his planned impeachment. He's now facing criminal charges. Dina Boluarte, Castillo's vice president, was sworn in as Peru's sixth president in just 5 years. Boluarte unveiled her cabinet on Saturday. Pakistan's Shia Muslims are holding events and ceremonies marking the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, daughter of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Our correspondent, Nasir Kazmi, has more in this report from Islamabad.
Like other parts of the Muslim world, Islam's faithful followers in Pakistan also observed the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, the revered daughter of Prophet Muhammad. People from all walks of life attended morning ceremonies in different cities and towns across the country to pay tribute to Hazrat Fatima Zahra, who is also the wife of the first Shia Imam, Ali ibn Abi Talib. The morning ceremonies included reciting verses from the Holy Quran, congregational prayers, and lectures on the life and sacrifices of the daughter of Islam's last prophet. While highlighting the valuable contributions of Islam's greatest lady, religious scholars said Fatima Zahra is one of the five holy ladies in the history of the world and has a very high position in Islam.
When we say that Fatima Zahra is a role model, we do not mean that this is the only limited to a few areas of her life. This discussion is endless, and we can never stop discussing the greatness of her personality.
Fatima Zahra is a shining example not only for women, but every Muslim. She cemented the guidance and teaching which Islam brought and showed us that they are possible to implement in our daily lives.
Some mourners also gave away food to the people in need to mark the occasion. They say that helping others in need is the lesson given to all Muslims by the Prophet Muhammad and his household.
We organize ceremonies every year to pay tribute to Hazrat Fatima Zahra. Distributing food is a custom of the Prophet's household, which is to be followed by their faithful followers.
Iran, Iraq, and Lebanon are among the other Muslim countries marking the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra. While honoring her immense sacrifices and services in the path of Islam, participants in the ceremonies described Fatima Zahra as the best role model, not only for the Muslims, but for the followers of all religions. Nasir Kazmi in Islamabad.
That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need, which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
In the limelight.
Police in Paris arrested at least 74 football fans as violence erupted in the French capital after Saturday's quarterfinal matches between France and England and Morocco and Portugal. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered the story and tells us more. Football fans clash violently with police officers in Paris following Saturday's quarterfinal matches between France and England and Morocco and Portugal. Around 20,000 people took to the streets of Paris after the final whistle blew in France's 2-1 victory over England in Qatar. Although the mood was originally celebratory, clashes between fans and police officers soon turned violent, with officers spraying tear gas into the crowd and arresting at least 74 people, according to a report by Le Parisien. Video shared on social media appears to show French police kicking and beating several fans who were lying on the ground amid the chaos. Thousands of supporters had filled the famous Parisian Avenue Champs-Élysées soon after a match between Morocco and Portugal, chanting, waving flags, and honking their horns amid large police deployment. More fans joined them after France's win against England. According to Reuters news agency, people smashed shop windows and fights took place between the fans and the police. Photographs from central Paris appeared to show several fires, as well as police with riot shields facing off against protesters with fireworks and flares. Local media also reported that some projectiles were thrown at police officers by angry fans. Items being hurled included large pieces of wood and stones. Police officers responded by using tear gas against some young fans, reportedly outside the famous shopping Champs-Élysées, Dior Street. According to local media, the atmosphere on the streets changed around midnight, with one of families celebrating earlier in the evening to groups of young men who began smashing shop windows and clashing with police. Several stores on the Champs-Élysées had already been boarded up in anticipation of the night's festivities. Several motorcycles were pictured on fire, and flames could also be seen on Avenue de Friedland, close to Champs-Élysées. As clashes turned increasingly heated, videos on social media appeared to show some fans being kicked and hit with batons by police officers. Shattering glass could also be heard in the background of the videos. On Friday, 9th of December, French authorities announced that more than 1,200 police officers would be mobilized in order to deal with any possible disorder in the streets. Some streets in the surrounding area were flooded with police vehicles. Paris had initially erupted with joy as crowds celebrated a famous French World Cup victory against England. Renditions of the national anthem, La Marseillaise, and Allez le Bleu could be heard across the freezing cold streets of the French capital. England's quest for World Cup glory had been brought to a heartbreaking conclusion after a vital penalty kick was missed by Harry Kane. This saw France eke out a breathless 2-1 victory in Qatar. The teams went into halftime tied at 1-1, but Les Bleus managed to claw their way in front when their all-time top scorer, Olivier Giroud, scrambled in front of Harry Maguire and guided an excellent ball from Antoine Griezmann in at the near post. For a moment, it looked as though France's lead was going to be short-lived when substitute Mason Mount was bundled to the floor in the box and was awarded a penalty. But star striker Harry Kane, having scored an assured spot kick just minutes earlier, saw his second effort soar over the crossbar, sending the three lions crashing out of the World Cup at the quarterfinal stage. Gareth Southgate's men were clearly devastated at the final whistle, the players listing helplessly around the pitch in utter dejection while the French contingent erupted into celebrations. Gareth Southgate made a beeline for his captain Harry Kane, who looked as though he could scarcely believe the result. England's captain had sunk to his knees at the final whistle and his teammates requested television cameras to turn their focus elsewhere. Jude Bellingham, meanwhile, collapsed in the turf in tears. Gareth Southgate showed true sportsmanship in defeat by congratulating France captain Hugo Lloris, while the remainder of his players saluted and applauded the fans while holding back tears. The Euroweekly News website has also covered the same story and gives us more detail. At least 74 people have been arrested in Paris, France, following violent clashes with football fans following the World Cup matches featuring France and Morocco. Violence flared in the French capital, Paris, late on Saturday, 10th of December. According to Le Parisien, at least 74 people were arrested in the vicinity of the city's famous Champs-Élysées Boulevard. The nationalities of those detained were not specified by the publication. Around 20,000 people had gathered there in the festive atmosphere following France's victory over England in the 2022 Qatar World Cup earlier in the night. Local reports said that the detained troublemakers had been throwing projectiles and fireworks at police officers. At midnight, the police were still actively dealing with a large crowd of football fans. A special security operation aimed at fighting crime to ensure the safety of goods and people in Paris in the inner suburbs and in the public transport system had been announced in advance on Friday, 9th of December. As a result, 1,220 police officers and gendarmes were deployed from 4 p.m. in the French capital. A specific operation was also put in place on the Avenue des Champs-Élysées in order to prevent any disturbance to public order likely to be generated by supporters and to fight against all the phenomena of delinquency, specified the Prefecture of Paris Police. To avoid traffic congestion on the axis leading to the Arc de Triomphe, several access gates to Paris via the Ring Road, Porte de la Mouette, Porte Maillot, Porte de Tains and Porte Dauphin were closed from 6:30 p.m. Patrols had also been deployed in train stations in Paris. Another night of violence is anticipated by Paris police when France play Morocco next Wednesday, 14th of December, with a place in the World Cup final at stake.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. As you know, on this program we will address the most important issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, communities and most importantly, the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So stay tuned.
In this edition of the Subcontinent, we will discuss how the growing strategic partnership between Pakistan and China has caused alarm in Washington. And we shall also look into Nepal's general election results and why it's good news for New Delhi.
Pakistan's growing strategic partnership with all-weather ally China is causing jitters in Washington, especially after Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif's visit to Beijing last month. It comes as the United States seeks to cement its ties with India, a critical regional rival of both Beijing and Islamabad. A recent report by a Washington-based think tank says the U.S. is looking to push Pakistan to change its strategic calculus, which is centered on the country's security environment, while calling for a more nuanced U.S. policy on Pakistan.
Chinese President Xi Jinping told Pakistani Premier Shehbaz Sharif during the latter's visit to Beijing last month that China will continue its fundamental policy of opening up and providing new opportunities to Islamabad and other allies through development projects. Sharif became the first world leader to visit China after the 20th Communist Party of China's Congress concluded, demonstrating the ironclad nature of China-Pakistan relations. Their relationship has lately been defined by a high level of strategic coordination and political mutual trust. Pakistan sees its ties with China as a cornerstone of its foreign policy, while Beijing sees its alliance with Islamabad from a strategic perspective. The strengthening of ties between China and Pakistan has understandably fueled concern in Washington. The U.S. Department of Defense report says China relies on Pakistan to project its military and economic might as Islamabad remains a key Beijing ally. The 2022 China Military Power Report, released last week, examined how China seeks to achieve what it called the National Rejuvenation Objective by 2049 with the help of international partners such as Pakistan. According to the report, China ranks Pakistan as its only all-weather strategic partner and Russia as its only comprehensive strategic partner.
The growing unease in Washington is rooted in China's expanding political, economic, and strategic ties with Pakistan as well as Russia, especially with the phenomenal success of the ambitious China-Pakistan Economic Corridor project and Russia's interest in joining it. The fact that the International Monetary Fund review for releasing the next tranche of funding to Pakistan remains stalled since September due to the U.S. pressure, forcing Islamabad to turn to a friendly country for external financing, also shows deepening cracks in ties between Islamabad and Washington.
Relations between China and Pakistan took shape following the 1962 Sino-Indian border dispute as India became a common strategic concern for both countries. The move to cede the Shaksgam Valley in the disputed Himalayan region of Kashmir to China in 1963 further cemented ties between them, much to the chagrin of New Delhi. Fast forward to 2013, China-Pakistan ties were redefined when President Xi announced the Belt and Road Initiative, a massive infrastructure and investment project whose cornerstone was the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. This came amid growing proximity between New Delhi and Washington. While reports point to the Biden administration's attempt to reset ties with Pakistan, especially after former Pakistani Premier Imran Khan accused Washington of toppling his government, the fact that the International Monetary Fund has stalled the release of the next tranche of funding to the South Asian country, apparently under the U.S. pressure, has left Pakistan in dire need of external funding. Pakistan's finance minister, Ishaq Dar, on December 2nd said the country expects to secure $3 billion U.S. dollars in external financing from a foreign country in 2 weeks. In contrast, China agreed to roll over $4 billion U.S. dollars worth of sovereign loans to the South Asian country after Prime Minister Sharif's recent visit to Beijing. A friend in need is a friend indeed.
Now, to have more insight on this, we are joined by Mr. A. Sun Ho. Welcome to the program, sir. Now, the Chinese President Xi Jinping said last month that Prime Minister Sharif's visit to Beijing will provide a new impetus to the all-weather strategic partnership between the two sides. So how significant is this?
Well, the so-called China-Pakistan economic corridor is very important economically and strategically to both China and Pakistan. For Pakistan, it means reviving the country's economy, bringing about more development for the country and so on. For China, of course, it would mean China would have another access to the Indian Ocean, for example. So this economic corridor, unfortunately, over the last few years, due to the coronavirus pandemic, it was slowed down. And also sometimes there are, shall we say, political and social instabilities in Pakistan. So that also did not help in terms of bringing this China-Pakistan economic corridor forward. So I think with this visit by Prime Minister Sharif, both the China side and the Pakistan side, they would very much like to revive this China-Pakistan economic corridor.
So why is Pakistan's growing political, economic and strategic partnership with China causing jitters in Washington?
Well, China and Pakistan's traditional friendship went back a long way. I could remember it went back for at least half a century to the late 1960s and 1970s. Actually, it's very ironic. The U.S.-China resumption of their formal relationship was helped by Pakistan in the early 1970s, when Pakistan was sort of the middle person between China and the U.S. in bringing the two superpowers together. But since then, of course, relationship between Pakistan and U.S., sometimes they are very good, sometimes it's not so good, because sometimes the U.S. would accuse Pakistan of harboring some terrorist elements. But sometimes the U.S. Would assist Pakistan militarily. Now, when the U.S. is not in a better relation with Pakistan for a stretch of time, China, of course, sees that opportunity and, try to fill in the gap. And, for example, this China-Pakistan economic corridor, because it could potentially benefit Pakistan a lot. So the China-Pakistan relationship sometimes becomes quite warm, as with now. Then, of course, the U.S. is not quite happy about that.
So do you think the unease in Washington is due to China and Russia emerging as new power centers amid the changing world order and also the success of China's Belt and Road Initiative?
Well, the problem with recent U.S. Foreign policy, it's sometimes it is very heavy on the rhetoric, but not so heavy on the action part. For example, China, with its Belt and Road Initiative, they would, roll out a lot of trading relationship, a lot of investments, for example, in countries like Pakistan. The U.S., on the other hand, for example, sometimes they will condemn some activities by Pakistan. Sometimes they promise certain aids to Pakistan, but very often these sort of aids are not actually delivered. So, you know, from Pakistani point of view, and indeed from the point of view of many developing countries, well, the U.S. Doesn't seem to so-called walk its talk. Whereas China, typically, they were bringing a lot of investments to these countries. Thereby, I think it is almost inevitable that a lot of these developing countries would find themselves more and more friendly with China and perhaps distancing themselves a little bit from the United States.
So, sir, talking about the United States, it has used the International Monetary Fund as a tool to pressure Islamabad into towing its line. So the question is, should Pakistan be looking elsewhere for external financing?
Well, Pakistan's economy is, frankly speaking, not in the best shape. It has to get assistance from whichever source that it could get its hands on. That would include anything from IMF to hopefully a very generous China. And I think that's part of the reason why Prime Minister Sharif is going to China. He was looking for some delays in paying some of the debts owed to China, or hopefully to get some forgiveness of those debts. I think very often you'll find China to be more generous in doing so, especially to developing countries. On the other hand, IMF, well, it has a very rigid, very often Western-oriented standards, and it's very difficult for you not to, you know, pay back to IMF on time and so on. But if your country is simply not in a condition to do that, yeah, then you have to look for sources elsewhere.
Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Government of Pakistan in a tweet said, during his two-day visit to China last month, Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif and Chinese President Xi Jinping discussed broad-based cooperation in economy and investment and exchanged views on regional and global developments. Researcher and writer Sartaj Khan cites a recent Pentagon report as stating that China ranks Pakistan as its only all-weather strategic partner and Russia as its only comprehensive strategic partner. Chinese embassy in Pakistan in a tweet appreciates Islamabad's efforts in making China-Pakistan relations the cornerstone of its foreign policy, adding that the two sides will strengthen communication and cooperation.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Last month, Nepal held elections for the parliament as well as for the provinces, the second vote since the country's constitution was promulgated in 2015. The final result is expected next week, but it appears that no political party will gain the majority in the 275-member house. Odds are in favor of the Nepali Congress-led alliance, which is good news for India. Importantly, the landlocked country situated in the Himalayas has in recent years been the battleground for regional supremacy between New Delhi and Beijing.
The general election in Nepal is being keenly followed by both India and China, the two regional powers. The Himalayan country has, under Prime Minister Sher Bahadur Deoba, shifted more towards New Delhi, sparking concern in Beijing. Thus, from India's perspective, the Deboa-led government is the best possible scenario. The five-party alliance comprises the Nepali Congress led by Deoba, the Communist Party of Nepal Maoist Center, the Communist Party of Nepal Unified Socialist, the Loktantrik Samajwadi Party, and the Rashtriya Janamorcha. Chinese strategists won't be happy with the possible election outcome, considering Beijing's foray into influencing the country's power politics. Over the past decade, the Chinese embassy in Kathmandu played an instrumental role in the merger of Nepal's two frontline communist parties into a single entity, the Nepal Communist Party, which paved the way for the thumping win of the alliance in the 2017 election. China's influence on the communist parties even prompted some to ask whether Beijing was micromanaging the country's power politics. Political pundits say the India-China rivalry to gain leverage in the landlocked country is set to enter a fresh phase when a new government takes charge in Kathmandu. A new turf is ready for the two powers.
The ruling Nepali Congress enjoys deep-rooted ties to India. After Sher Bahadur Deoba succeeded KP Sharma Oli as the country's prime minister in 2021, relations between the two countries not only improved but gained fresh momentum. China and India aren't the only countries with an eye on the Nepal elections. The United States, which has a fierce rivalry with China, is also following the political upheaval. a key strategic ally of New Delhi, Washington seeks to undermine China's Belt and Road Initiative and its Indo-Pacific influence.
After succeeding former Prime Minister Oli, the leader of the Communist Party of Nepal, in what was described as a Game of Thrones in 2021, Dauba embarked on his first visit to India in April 2021. The three-day visit helped resurrect a relationship that had been in the doldrums under the China-backed government in Kathmandu. Even before Oli began his first of the three fleeting terms in October 2015, India and Nepal were at odds over the new constitution that apparently did not include the marginalization concerns of two ethnic groups that live in the region bordering India and constitute 40% of Nepal's population. When Oli was removed from power in his first term, he blamed New Delhi. In 2018, he staged a comeback due to the unification of the communist factions, in which China played a key role. In the second term, India-Nepal relations virtually broke down over the map controversy. With pro-India Dauba in the driver's seat now, the mood in New Delhi is upbeat. The Indo-Pacific policymakers in Washington are also in a celebratory mood, as it will help them further undermine China's Belt and Road Initiative, of which Nepal forms a vital cog.
Now, to talk more on this, we will also be joined by Mr. Goldoni, an analyst and commentator from Hong Kong. But before that, let's continue with Mr. A Sun Ho, who has kindly stayed with us. Now, sir, talking about the Nepal elections, a five-party political alliance led by Prime Minister Sher Bahadur Dube is set to form the new government in Nepal despite the hung parliament. Is that good news for India?
Well, Nepal is a country which situates itself between India and China, and therefore when these two big regional powers are not quite friendly with each other, then Nepal, it's very often squeezed in between. And Nepalese politics in recent years have been a contest between China on the one hand and India on the other hand in terms of influencing which parties or which politicians would come to power. Dauba is, of course, widely perceived to be more pro-India as opposed to his predecessor, Mr. Oli. And therefore, if Dauba were to form the new government, it would, at least for the moment, be seen to be more favorable to India. But of course, because this is, in a sense, a coalition government, and it may not be as stable as if Dauba were forming the government only with his party. So I think what we could see now, it's only India has a temporary upper hand at the moment here.
Now, for the next question, I would like to welcome Mr. Goldoni to the program. Mr. Goldoni, the landlocked country has moved towards India since Dauba took office in 2021, antagonizing China. But can the new government afford to ignore Beijing amid shifting geopolitical dynamics?
I can say that the coalition that has getting power in 2021 has start to move and shift its attention, let's say from China more to India. I believe that in a country where the economic, the GDP is not very high. It's quite small, actually. We are talking about $45 billion. It's very important to have an economy that is open to the most important driving source of growth in Asia. It means China, definitely. And, of course, also India. So I see this one, reorganizing of a priority, a little bit risky for a country as Nepal, as you said, is landlocked, where they have a huge border with Tibet. So I really think that they should be more careful in rearranging the priorities. Now, in this case, I'm talking about economic priorities, and it's quite clear that this priority has been most probably imposed by external means, by external actor.
Back to Mr. Ahsan Oh again. Sir, why is India so important for Nepal and vice versa in terms of strategic and economic interests?
Well, in a sense, India shares more culturally with Nepal. A number of India's major religions originated from Nepal, such as Buddhism and so on. So traditionally, India would consider Nepal to be one of its, in a sense, a protectorate, even though officially they could not call so. But of course, in recent years, as China's economic muscles grow, it also tried to dabble its hands in terms of growing its influence in Nepal. So that's why you have this, in a sense, tug of war between two regional powers, which manifests itself in the politics of Nepal. Sometimes you would see Nepalese leaders who are more pro-China and sometimes more pro-India. But the traditional leanings of Nepal was indeed with India. It's just that, frankly speaking, India perhaps is not in a position to assist Nepal economically to a large extent. And that's why China could play its important role.
Last but not least, to finish this off, let's go back to Mr. Goldoni. Sir, do you think the United States will step up its Indo-Pacific interventionist games in order to undermine its chief adversary, China, under the Juba government?
I believe that Nepal is a very important geopolitical strategic in a strategic position, very, very important. For several reasons. One is regarding the borders, no? Because if we have seen recently, let's say in the last 1 year, where the most friction we have between India and China, all the friction was around the borders from the north of India and then even to Bhutan. And definitely, because the border with Nepal and Tibet is so long, it will be strategic to try to influence and to control this country. But I will add one more reason why is important. My analysis is the reason is important because the United States are trying to give something to India in order to bring the position to India more close to the United States, especially in confronting the two main problems, the geopolitical problem that now they have. It means Russia and China. And in the past, that India is not so much, as I can say, willing to take part, you know, from in this to let's say conflict, potential conflict, but Nepal could be a kind of candies, a kind of pawn that is given to India in order to give something and try to bring India on the political side of the United States. I see this one in this point, yeah.
On that note, I would like to thank both our guests, Mr. Ahsan Oh from Kuala Lumpur and Mr. Fabrizio Goldoni from Hong Kong, for being on the program, and thank you for your precious time and knowledge. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Nepal-based journalist Santosh Gimir says the results of country's general elections are yet to emerge, but it is likely that the dice is loaded in favor of the Nepali Congress-led alliance that is considered close to India. Anil Sigdale, a policy analyst and author, notes the emergence of a new equation in Nepali politics, especially one that carries an anti-American tone, which he says will continue to test American diplomacy in Nepal. Nepal-based academic Upendra Gautam points to foreign interference in Nepal after the general elections, citing reports saying that Indian diplomats are engaged in talks with politicians in the power corridors.
And that was our episode about Pakistan's growing strategic partnership with China and how it's giving jitters to hawks in Washington. And also, Nepal's general election being the good news for India. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
In the limelight.
Due to increase in the Zionist regime's crimes against oppressed Palestinians in 2022, the resistant groups and the Palestinian Authority have asked the international community to criminalize Israeli violations against Palestinians and to hold the occupying regime accountable for its crimes. The occupying Zionist regime has become so brazen that it regularly slaughters innocent Palestinians quite openly in front of their loved ones. We have taken a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us.